Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 13th. Currently, I've got 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City and 59 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Hayes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're starting off with some cool and comfortable conditions across most of the state this morning. We had some overnight showers and thunderstorms still ongoing after those big-time thunderstorms that moved through during our Monday afternoon and evening. But those are starting to weaken this morning. So we've got some light rain still left out there in spots, but most areas are beginning to dry out. So that's going to lead to some clouds, some slightly cooler temperatures and breezy conditions this morning. But we are going to be seeing those temperatures warming back up, probably into the upper 70s to low 80s around Park City. As you get up into the Heber Valley, temperatures warming up into the low 80s. But we do want you to remain weather aware, very similar to yesterday. Today, we are expecting another round of showers and thunderstorms to develop, especially just after lunchtime. So we'll say 1-2 o'clock, and then continuing to overspread the area through about 5-6 o'clock in the evening. And those storms are going to produce some heavy rain, some gusty winds. We could see some isolated wind gusts up to 50 to 60 miles per hour that could knock over some tree branches. And of course, any of that unsecured loose furniture out on the patios and things like that, make sure you have those secure because we could see those blowing around as well. Otherwise, that chance of scattered showers and storms could drop about a half inch to another inch of rainfall in spots. So, yes, this is some beneficial rain. We could just do without the lightning and the gusty winds. We'll see those storms calming down tonight, and then we'll start off our Wednesday with a chance of a few scattered showers and storms in both Park City and the Heber Valley. But as we go throughout the afternoon hours, I think we start to dry things out. But temperatures staying very comfortable in the upper 70s to 80 in Park City and the low to mid 80s in the Heber Valley. And then as we get towards your Thursday into Friday, we're going to actually completely dry things out. I think the sunshine comes back. That will start to heat the temperatures up a little bit, but we're not talking about heat wave territory. But highs will be back into the low to mid 80s in Park City, upper 80s to low 90s as you get towards the Heber Valley. So we'll get back to a more typical pattern once we get past about Thursday. And then as we get into, let's say, Sunday into Monday, that typical drier pattern will start to go away, and we'll see more monsoonal moisture returning, and that could lead to a few more pop-up showers and storms redeveloping as we get towards the end of the weekend heading into next week. So that monsoonal pattern may return once again across the area. But for today, again, we should be seeing just a few spotty showers this morning, drying it out around midday, but after about 2 o'clock this afternoon, expect widespread showers and thunderstorms to redevelop again. Again, with that marginal risk for a strong to severe storm, which would feature some gusty winds, heavy rainfall, and again, that chance of small hail. But of course, we'll keep you updated as we go throughout the afternoon. Stay safe and stay weather aware.
Okay, thanks, Cedric. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young. She'll preview Wednesday's County Council meeting agenda. Later on, Mountain Mediation Center Executive Director Gretchen Lee calling in with some details on their upcoming fundraiser and all of the other programs they've got offered. And from Recycle Utah, we've got Carolyn Warra and Jim Bedell in with an update on the temporary closure of the center. It's 8:10. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Taking a look now at some local news. The LDS temple conflicts are playing out in several towns around the country, including right here in Wasatch County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has an update on the status of the Heber Valley Temple and how the legal challenges are proceeding in other states.
The story will sound familiar to anyone who's been following the efforts of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to build a temple in the Heber Valley. A massive steeple, bright lighting, church members eager to have the place of worship, and neighbors equally determined to prevent its construction. Last week, the town council in Fairview, Texas, denied a conditional use permit for a temple to be built in the Dallas suburb. According to Texas news reports, plans called for a 44,000-square-foot building with a 173-foot steeple. And thousands of residents protested it would worsen traffic and obstruct views of the landscape in the night sky. Some Heber residents made similar arguments, though local leaders favored plans for a temple to be built just outside the Heber city limits. In November, the Wasatch County Council unanimously approved a proposal for an 88,000-square-foot building with a steeple that will reach 210 feet into the sky. Soon after, opponents of the plan sued the county, arguing the construction agreement is illegal. But in Texas, it will be the church making appeals for a different outcome. Fairview's mayor told local news he expects the church will sue. The legal fight over the future of the Heber Valley Temple is still in process. In May, a judge granted the church's request to join the lawsuit as a defendant alongside the county. The lawyers in the case have been filing documents in support of their arguments all summer. Heber and Fairview aren't the only communities divided by a temple dispute. Opponents raised similar arguments to try to prevent a temple outside Las Vegas, but the city council approved construction plans earlier this summer. And in Cody, Wyoming, the community has been arguing for over a year about plans for a 100-foot-tall temple. A lawsuit in Cody is awaiting a judge's decision. The church's communications department declined to comment on the recent community challenges to temple plans, but pointed to cities in Arkansas and California that embraced new temples. To learn more about the Heber Valley Temple, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council meets Wednesday at the Richens Center. In the studio with a preview, I have Deputy Summit County Attorney Jana Young. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Oh, let's get you turned on here there. First up is the Mountain Regional Water Annexation. So where is this located and who wants to come into the district?
Yeah, I always like to start out by explaining why specific items are coming to the County Council for consideration and approval. So quick background on this item. Mountain Regional Water Service District was established in 2000 by the County Commission at the time to provide regional water service to the Snyderville Basin. So when there is a new development or a parcel coming online that doesn't currently have water service, they actually have to petition to annex into the water district boundaries, which requires approval from the district's administrative control board, then the county council, and then finally the lieutenant governor. So this particular petition that the county council will consider tomorrow is to annex a new subdivision that is coming online located adjacent to the colony at White Pine Canyon subdivision. It is called Last Chance at White Pine Subdivision. It is phase one of that subdivision, which is about four lots. I think it's entitled for up to 12, so we probably will see another annexation come down the line. This is not a surprise to Mountain Regional Water. They have been expecting this development for a while, so they do have the appropriate water storage in place to service this, and they are recommending that the council approve the annexation.
All right, so is Mountain Regional currently supplying water then to the colony?
I believe, yeah, there are areas there that are annexed into the district.
Okay, so we're talking about pumping the water up the mountain here.
I mean, it's already they have, the water goes up to Promontory and then it comes down through. I don't imagine this changes their operations at all. It's just adding another service area to their operations.
All right. And do we have any updates on the Rockport Estates efforts to annex into the Mountain Regional Water District?
So I did ask what Mountain Regional Water General Manager Andy Garland this issue, and he tells me that Rockport Estates is working with an engineering firm on two paths forward toward annexation. The first is to try to connect with Mountain Regional Water, and the second is to see if they can augment the existing wells or potentially drill a third well. And so that's all I know at this point, but it looks like they are working forward to try to make that happen.
All right, also on the agenda is the annexation petition from the Ballerina Farms. They actually want to annex into Camas City. So what's the county's role in this?
Yeah, so we traditionally bring all annexations forward to the county council, and this is a formality, but also by state code, the council has, after we receive a certified petition, we have 30 days to formally protest or object to that annexation if we wish to. Typically, objections to annexations would include any type of hardship, usually financial for the county if that annexation were to occur. For instance, if it would create a peninsula or cherry stem that might cause specific problems for the county. For example, if we would have to cross a boundary through that expanded municipality to provide services. Or, for example, if the municipality decided to annex a piece of land that might be a significant source of tax revenue for us, if it were now to move into the municipality. We're not seeing any of that in this case. This is truly an annexation that has been in the works for a while. It consists of about 140 acres located off State Road 248 and West 200 South. It is adjacent to Camas City. It is within the Camas City Annexation Declaration Area. It is known as Ballerina Farms. They are looking to expand their agriculture operations, which to do that sustainably really would be best if they were tied into sewer, which the city can provide for them. We cannot do that in the county right now. We are not seeing any big issues with this annexation. Our staff has reviewed the application. They feel it complies with state code. They are not seeing any reason to formally object to it. We are aware that the Camas City Council has approved the petition for further consideration. We have been aware of this since at least April, and at this point are not seeing any reason to object it.
Okay.
Object to it.
The reason I kind of ask is that we have seen over in Wasatch County where an applicant would petition to annex both in Heber City and, you know, or stay in Wasatch County, basically seeing who offers the best deal.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't seem to be the case here. It is not a situation of playing jurisdictions off each other. It truly just comes down to an infrastructure challenge, and annexing into the city seems to solve that problem for them.
Okay. There is a scheduled joint meeting with the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. I didn't see a staff report on this, so do we know what's going to be discussed?
Yeah, so we traditionally try to get the council together with our two planning commissions on a routine basis to meet, usually for operational efficiency. It's an opportunity to talk about vision, especially when there are periods of change and potential change, which seems to be our constant state these days. Additionally, when there are language and pressures over time, it's helpful to see if we're all rowing in the same direction. And we don't often, we try to do this on a quarterly basis, but because of scheduling challenges, it usually happens about once a year. We don't often have agendas for these meetings because we like them to be kind of a free form discussion of whatever issues are top of mind for the council and the commissions. I would anticipate that the council will bring up some of the projects they're currently involved in, potentially the discussions around the public-private partnership with Dakota Pacific, maybe even discussions with UDOT around the Kimball Junction and I-80 interchange, around Olympics planning perhaps, maybe even the Klein-Dolly RFP. We're also, the county is working on updating our two general plans, so they may bring that up, and potential rezones in general. On the Planning Commission side, while they should not be discussing any current applications that are before them in detail, they are likely to bring up concerns and maybe excitement over some of the potential impacts of changes at the Tanger outlets and projects at Silver Creek. This is also an opportunity for the two entities to talk about, and we've been seeing this trend at the state level through the legislative process of moving more towards sticks rather than carrots to try to incentivize cities and counties to do more around affordable housing and incentivized development. We've seen them shorten the planning process or take things out of the legislative purview and move it to the administrative purview. So they may talk about how that is influencing or changing the council and planning commission processes and our community vision. So those are some of the things that I personally anticipate might come up during this discussion, but we really don't know. So I do encourage the public to tune in and see what they actually do bring up.
Okay, and only an hour has been scheduled, so
right.
Yeah.
That'll go fast.
That'll go fast, yeah. Also, at 5 o'clock, at 6:15, back into work session, on the discussion regarding the West 200 South Road. This is known as the Gun Club Road, another hour-long discussion. This is, what, prior to the joint meeting with Wasatch County?
Yeah, so it's, I believe there are going to be two discussions about this road. We have invited Wasatch County to come talk to the council about this. I do think this is a great illustration of both the complexity of growth along the Wasatch Back and also Summit County's interest in regional planning and collaboration. For a bit of background to let you know what I mean by that, the Gun Club Road, also known as Old Camas Highway and West 200 South, is a Summit County road that crosses into Wasatch Wasatch County, where there are two housing developments, Tuhei and Wakara, which is creating a lot of construction traffic on the road. We've been hearing complaints from Summit County residents who live along West 200 South about this traffic, specifically things like speeding, dust and diesel exhaust, because it is a gravel road, noise, road damage, safety, and general disruption to their daily lives. They have been asking the council as the road authority to restrict traffic on this road to more local residents and limit that construction. Well, the council has found that this might be the only access point to that Wakara development. And so before taking action in the spirit of regional collaboration, they wanted to meet with Wasatch County and these two developments to learn a little bit more about the implications of doing that, while also keeping Summit County residents' interest and protection at front of mind. I don't know if the community is aware, but for the last year or two, the council has been working with Wasatch County on a rural planning organization, along with Mountain Lands Association of Governments, precisely for this type of situation, to do more regional planning and collaboration around transportation specifically, but also in development, to see that when we are entitling developments in our respective jurisdictions, that we can be more collaborative so that we're not creating any undue hardships for each other when we are entitling these things. And so they're really just trying to get as much information as they can from everyone's perspectives and see what options there might be before they take action on this issue.
Okay, so the road is a Summit County road.
Correct.
Is there another entrance, though, that Wakara could use?
Not that we are aware of at this point. It is sort of interesting. I think at one point, Wasatch County even abandoned their section of the road. So it is a complex issue. I think there are questions around why that was, or, you know, if there was you know, consideration of ingress egress when the development was approved and all of that. So we're trying to better understand this issue and again what options there might be so that the county council can make the best decision for Summit County.
Yeah, and I know that this was before Wasatch County Council in terms of whether or not a PID or a public infrastructure district is formed, I think specifically to build or pave that road, so that's certainly one of the considerations?
I would imagine so, yeah. I'm not aware of what Wasatch County is considering at this time, but I imagine they are, you know, there might be plans for the future to do some additional development there, but while the development is occurring, this is the access point that they have right at this moment.
All right. I think that's about it on the agenda. But let's talk briefly. I mean, the Summit County Fair has come and gone. How did that go?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. Very successful event. I want to give a huge shout out to Tyler Orgel, our fair and special events manager, along with his partners at Silly Market, Kate and Michelle. We also have great support from our facilities team and Steve Kies out of Public Works and our inmate crews for putting on a great fair. It was a little bit of a different arrangement this year. We are upgrading our fairgrounds, and so we appreciate the public's patience. We actually did a different layout and setup this year so that we could allow the seating of our new grass field to come in. We didn't allow people and trucks to go on that, so we actually set up everything on the other side of Chalk Creek, and it, you know, it showed that we can put on a successful event even when there are new challenges, and be flexible and innovative. And so it was still, you know, a wonderful livestock auction. I actually was talking to John on the way in. His son did the little buckaroo rodeo. So, you know, we start them young in Summit County. And again, great demolition derby, two nights of the PRCA rodeo, great attendance. We also get excellent support from the Park City Chamber of Commerce Visitors Bureau and the funding that they give to the fair. So I just want to thank the community for coming out and supporting this, and again for the staff for putting on a great event. And you know, the fun continues. We actually have a concert this Saturday, August 17th. We are bringing in Rodney Atkins in concert, also at the county fairgrounds. Tickets are still available if people are interested. That you can go to summitcountyfair.org. We will have special guest Olivia Wolf. She will go on at 7 p.m. Rodney will then perform at 8:30 and gates open at 6 p.m. So please come and check that out.
Okay. And I don't know if this was before your time or not, but the county did renegotiate the money that from the transient room tax that is paid to the Chamber Bureau, keeping more of that lodging dollars. So that was to specifically make improvements to the fairgrounds. Have those repairs all been made, or is there still more to do?
There's still more to do. That is underway. It is a multi-phase project to upgrade the fairgrounds. We're in phase two right now. Phase one, if you recall, was to redo the barns and to build the Ledges Event Center, which has been a very successful project for us. That event center is used almost every day. It's a great amenity for North Summit and the community at large. Phase two is actually redoing the entire field area. So we did demolish the tennis courts and are rebuilding those up on North Summit Rex Beacon Hill property, and has created a lovely field space for multi-use sports events as well as concerts and other things. We used to have a baseball diamond there too, which having the dirt and everything created complications. So now it's a big grassy area, which will create a lovely space again for the fair, as well as concerts and sports events like lacrosse and soccer. We also created a really great new irrigation system to make it sustainable. There used to be really terrible soils there, so when we would water the grass, it would just go seep down into the ground, and it was a terrible situation. So that's much better now. We're putting in landscaping, new pathways, new lighting. It's going to be a great amenity once it's ready to go, and you'll see that next year at the fair.
Okay. Finally, I want to just mention, you alerted me that the 2025 budget process has started.
Yes.
And I know they seriously considered a tax increase last year, saying there were about $15 million to make up. Is that a tax increase in our future?
Well, this is going to be an interesting budget process, and I do encourage the public to stay tuned. You know, this part of the summer is when we do kick that off internally. Our departments have submitted their budget requests. The budget committee has formed. We started reviewing those. We have already met twice. We are required in September to present a recommendation to County Manager Shane Scott. He is then required to present his budget proposal to the County Council by October 15th. And then that will kick off the budget hearings that the Council will have. And they will approve a budget by usually the second week of December. As was mentioned last year, the county is really going through some serious hard looks at our budget. We've encountered some new mandates from the state around emergency medical services, new school resource officers that we have to put in every school. The public defender budget has grown. There's a lot of things that, as we talked about last year too, a new cell at the landfill. There's a lot of expenses that we need to cover. And the council, as you may have seen, recently referred to the ballot a new sales tax around emergency services to also deal with tourism impacts. So that's potentially a $16 million revenue that the voters will get to decide. So there's all of these things that are coming into play that we have to consider in looking at our revenues and expenditures, and again, seeing what the voters might do. So it's going to be an interesting conversation, a lot of things up in the air. It makes it difficult for the budget committee, not with a lot of these unknowns. And so we will be looking at very seriously these requests. There's a lot of needs in the county, very limited revenues, and a lot of unknowns. So it will be a difficult budget year for us. And we are asking for the community to engage with us in these conversations.
Okay, Jan, I'm gonna leave it there. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young. Well, a lot going on at the Mountain Mediation Center, and on the phone with details, I have Executive Director Gretchen Lee. Good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe just start by telling us what the Mountain Mediation Center does and how you're funded.
Yes, yes. So, well, first, thanks for having us on. And as you know, we're a local nonprofit and with a mission statement of bringing people together to prevent conflict, resolve disputes, and improve communication to a more inclusive community. So our program is all built around that. Traditionally, we've had mediation programs over at Small Claims Court. In more recent years, we have added on community mediation with providing opportunities for people to come to us to help, you know, resolve their disputes, whether it's in a divorce, landlord-tenant situation, you know, about any type of dispute can be assisted through mediation. So those are the mediation and the landlord-tenant. We also have additional trainings programs, communication trainings programs, and I'm sure most people will be familiar with our Let's Talk training program, which we took over from the Park City Leadership class last year, which has really been a great addition to our other cadre of trainings.
Yeah. What is the biggest issue that you deal with? Is it landlord-tenant disputes or divorcing spouses?
I would say landlord-tenant. Since COVID, it just seemed during COVID, we started getting a lot of calls around landlord-tenant. But when it wasn't just disputes, it was there a lot of folks, the inability to pay their lease. It was a very difficult time. And as a result of what we were seeing in terms of calls coming in, we realized how important it was to get to provide services up front before the conflicts occurred and for the education piece. So we have a tremendous program that focuses on that upfront prevention program.
All right. And do you have any numbers in terms of how many mediations you were involved in, say, last year?
Yes, yes. So overall, last year, it was over 50 mediations between our small claims court, landlord, tenant, and divorce mediations. However, that doesn't really tell the whole story. We do a lot of consults. We do a lot of education because ideally, if we can prevent them from folks from even getting to the mediation, you know, all the better. So the more upstream work that we can do, the better. So overall, last year with all of our programming, we hit more than 1,000 people in terms of our mediation, our education. We provide landlord-tenant consults on a one-on-one basis. So when folks do not understand their leases, they can give us a call. We don't provide legal services, but we can provide basic information about their leases.
Okay. And as you mentioned, Mountain Mediation Center has taken over that Let's Talk training that was put together by Leadership Class 29. How often are these being scheduled?
I would say since we've taken over, we probably do roughly around one a month. And we are going to be doing another one for the community, open to all members of the community in October. So stay tuned on that. But other than that, we have put them on for other nonprofits, other groups, just a variety of different folks have come to us interested in the Let's Talk training. So that's very active and moving forward. And it just ties in nicely with some of our other trainings.
Yeah. And if a nonprofit was interested in you coming to do that training to them, is there a fee to that?
We do charge a fee. However, the community trainings that we're offering, thanks to the Park City Rotary Club, we are able to offer two of those for at no charge to any community member. And we work with the groups in terms of nonprofits because we do want it accessible to all.
All right. And it looks like that in addition to the Let's Talk, then you've got kind of like three other modules that you also offer?
Yes, yes, yes. One that we have found in particular has gone really sort of in tandem with the Let's Talk is a building trust module. And so the Let's Talk seems to be a good starting point for a lot of organizations. It has the four communication skills. It's really an opportunity for folks to to practice, to engage some basic communication skills. And then the building trust is the next, I don't want to say the next step, but it's another step in better communication. So we do that. We also, we do have other trainings, which we, tailor to individual organizations' needs.
Okay. I also want to note that you, Mountain Mediation Center, was a finalist for the Women's Giving Fund grant this year. How much did you end up walking away with? Because I know you received a $25,000 grant as being one of the finalists, but then you were also up for a matching grant from an anonymous donor.
Yes, that was so exciting, and we were so honored to be named one of the three finalists for the Women's Giving Fund. And as you said, the award was $25,000. At the event, an anonymous donor was so moved by the event that they agreed to match the other two organizations that did not take home the grand prize with an additional $25,000. So we were beyond thrilled to get that additional $25,000 and very grateful to the Women's Giving Fund.
Okay, so that match was met then. That's impressive.
Yes, they met. I believe it was last week or the week before it was met.
Great. So what will you do with that funding?
Yes, so we applied for that funding. The Women's Giving Fund has a focus on families and women, and our program is focused around access to justice for women and families of the Wasatch Back. So focusing on our landlord-tenant programming and our divorce mediation and other community mediation programming.
Okay. And finally, you've got an upcoming fundraiser next month. Tell us about that.
Yes. So Friday, September 13th, we are going to have pizza at the Pendry. We're delighted for the Pendry supporting us once again this year. It'll be our second fundraiser, and it's 5 to 7 o'clock, and we'll have pizza and drinks and opportunity drawings, really to celebrate our success and to help raise funds so we can continue this important programming in our community.
All right. Tickets are how much?
They're $100, and they can be purchased as well as the opportunity drawing tickets on our website at mountainmediationcenter.org.
All right. And then what are the opportunity drawing? What are we hoping for to win here? Is there a prize?
Well, there are going to be a variety of prizes, including a few ski tickets, a few local restaurant passes. A few local restaurant coupons, just a variety of items.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Gretchen, you wanted to mention?
I don't think so, but just thanks for having me on, and hopefully you'll be able to join us at our event on the 13th.
All right. Gretchen Lee is the Executive Director of the Mountain Mediation Center. Thanks for your time. Deer Valley is hosting a community open house today to share its plans about a new workforce housing project in the center of town. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
The proposed housing development called Ski Rail would provide 200 beds for the resort's workers at the intersection of Bonanza Drive and Lower Iron Horse Loop Road. On Tuesday evening from 4 to 6 p.m., Deer Valley is hosting an open house at the site, which currently houses an old gas station. The open house will include a guided walkthrough of the area along with early concept designs. The Park City Planning Commission must approve the project before any building can begin. Deer Valley has not yet initiated that process with the city. The ski rail site is a close walk to bus stops and Homestake Road, where Park City is constructing a new affordable housing development. Deer Valley is required to build workforce housing under a letter of intent signed with Park City last year. That relates to the resort's plans to expand the snow park base area with hotels and commercial space. Plenty of parking is available on site for the open house Tuesday. The resort asks those interested in attending to RSVP online. A link can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, Recycle Utah will be shutting down for a couple of weeks. also celebrating its 100 mile meal this Saturday. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of Recycle Utah, Carolyn Wara, along with board member Jim Bedell. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning.
Hi.
Carolyn, you wanted to start first. There are tickets available
yep.
for the 100 mile meal?
Yeah. It's really excited about the 9th annual 100 mile meal Saturday evening. We hope it by our friend Epic Pomus and supported by Spire Coca-Cola and Gallery Mar. It'll be a great time. There are only 30 tickets left, so get yours today.
Okay, three, is that what I heard?
30.
30, okay, all right. And tickets are how much?
Tickets are $275. And remind everybody this is the major fundraiser for Recycle Utah this year, and we have about 30 tickets left. You can get them on our website at recycleutah.org.
Okay, and this is held up, I believe, at Red Pine Lodge?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's the whole idea behind it. Everything has been brought in within a circumference of 100 miles.
Yep, 100 miles, yep.
Yeah, it's really incredible. We have pretty much finished collecting the food that's available, and it's this is the first time I've been involved behind the scenes in this event. It's absolutely amazing, first of all, the diversity and quality of food that's available nearby, and then secondly, what the hospitality team at Park City Mountain Resort is able to do with this food. So it'll be a great event, and we look forward to seeing people on Saturday.
Okay, so people should understand there's like no seafood, but trout,
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah.
There is trout.
Yeah.
Okay, again, recycleutah.org, tickets $275. Does anything else happen besides the meal, or it's kind of like a several courses? So
it's a five-course meal
yeah.
With tremendous amount of food, both meat-based as well as plant-based. So whatever your particular interests and preferences are for food, we should be able to accommodate you. There's some past appetizers and then a sit-down meal.
All right. And then, as I mentioned, the center is closing. When's this happening?
Well, this is, in addition to the 100-mile meal, we have another great event that's taking a lot of our time this week, and that is our closure. The Engine House property development that is being built right behind us has been moving along, and they're at the point now where they need to connect to the sewer line. And unfortunately for Recycle Utah, that connection needs to go right through our property. So beginning next Monday, August 19th, and hopefully ending on the Tuesday after Labor Day, which I believe is the 3rd, we will be completely closed. There will be no access whatsoever to the facility. It'll be blocked off so that they can carve up the concrete and lay the sewer line.
Okay, so it's getting dug up. I mean, there's just, will you be able to get into the office?
We might be able to sneak into the office, but the facility, just to be clear to all the listeners, is absolutely closed. So we'll have no ability to drop off any material. We can't receive anything, nor can we ship anything out.
Okay, and is that accounting for any problems they may find along the way, or is that, could it open sooner, or not likely?
We've had enough conversations with the builder there in the city to believe that they'll get this done in the 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit out of our control, and I don't want to suggest that we could be longer, but we're fully expecting to be back open right after Labor Day. I think everyone involved appreciates how important it is to the community to have a drop-off recycling place.
Yeah, right? So what do people do?
Yeah. Well, what do people do is a very interesting question. First of all, we've already noticed yesterday, and it's just one day, so I wouldn't rely too heavily on the data, but it seemed a lot busier than normal for a Monday in the summertime. So I hope that people are cleaning out their recyclables and bringing them to us now. We're expecting very heavy volume this week, and we'd ask people to be patient if you have to sit in line a little while. The only other time, Carolyn was telling me earlier, that we've ever really been closed during a busy time are typically the days after, well, Christmas Day
yeah,
or New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So this will be kind of a unique experience for us in the community to just figure out how we can handle the material coming in now and also the amount of accumulated material that people want to bring us in September when we reopen.
Yeah. All right. So and it's really the, kind of the glass and the styrofoam. It's the stuff that people, you can't get picked up in your home recycling.
Correct.
That you see so much of.
Correct.
All right. So people have, again, through Sunday to make those drop-offs?
Yeah, I'd prefer, we're officially closed on Sunday, but we've always, since we don't have a gate on the property, people have come in and dropped off. We're we'll be fully staffed on Saturday, and we prefer people to come in Saturday.
Okay. All right. Any news on a new center so that maybe you don't have to have closure?
Well, interesting you asked that. We have retained a well-known recycling consulting firm called Resource Recycling Systems. They begin tomorrow with us on a large project that will help us define the types of facilities and collection strategies that we think the community will need to enable us to continue to provide the type of service we had in a growing Wasatch Back for decades to come. So that process starts tomorrow. The consultants will be here for 3 or 4 days. We're also going to visit some other sites in the Mountain West, towns and cities in some cases that are years ahead of us in this process, and hopefully learn from them. And then sometime late this year, have a definitive plan to present to the community, articulating exactly what we need in order to provide an expanded service to a growing area.
So do I hear a capital campaign in our future? Is that the idea, or?
I would think eventually, but the first step in the process is articulating exactly what we need. You know, in the past, the approach that we've taken for a long time now has been to simply think about moving what we have into a new facility or a new location. The more we've thought about that and the more we've talked with people about it and the more the community has grown, I think that strategy is not the right one. And thus, we've decided to spend some money and have been lucky enough to receive some grants from local foundations to help us pay for that, to hire experts and articulate what are you going to need for the next few decades, not just where's a good site to plunk Recycle Utah. So yes, I expect it'll cost money, Leslie, and we'll deal with that once we understand exactly what the plan is.
All right, and then when does the public, I guess, have a say in terms of what the consulting, the consultants are doing here? Will there be some public input?
Not expected. I'm hedging a little bit because one of the things that consultants want to do is spend a lot of time speaking with everybody who's involved in solid waste in the entire Wasatch Back, and that will clearly include county officials, both Wasatch, hopefully, and Summit County, who handle solid waste. It will entail discussions with a lot of the existing haulers who handle these materials under contract, as well as some of the smaller haulers. But we don't really see the need at this point for any direct public input on what the right strategy is. I think once that proposal is received from the consultants, there'll certainly be some discussion with the community about whether or not we want to go forward with this and how we're going to pay for it.
Okay. All right. So people, get your recycling together and bring it by before Saturday.
Yes. And
by
Saturday. And be patient, please.
Okay. Anything else? People, I don't know?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
All right. Jim, Carolyn,
thanks
so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Carolyn Moore and Jim Bedell with Recycle Utah. Summit County Search and Rescue reunited a missing 14-year-old with his family after he spent the night alone, lost in the Uinta Mountains over the weekend. The teen's family called for help Saturday after he got separated from the group along the Highline Trail along Mirror Lake Highway near Butterfly Lake. Summit County Sheriff deputies, the Utah Department of Public Safety, the U.S. Forest Service, and Mounted Patrol resources also responded to help in the search. It got dark before crews could find the missing teen, so they camped out overnight and resumed the search at sunrise. On Sunday morning, the team heard a whistle and then spotted the lost hiker thanks to the bright pink rain poncho he was wearing. He was in good condition and flown back to the trailhead. Summit County Sheriff Sergeant Skyler Talbot said that the 14-year-old did all of the right things to participate in his own rescue.
You know, near in a thick wooded area, it's difficult. Everything looks the same. So the more you can stand out, whether that's moving into an open marsh area or an open field, have a piece of clothing that's bright and easily observable from the ground and from the sky. Those are some things that are really going to increase the chances of a positive outcome.
And certainly having a whistle on him, that's great. He also said that if you do get separated from your group, stay in one place until help can arrive or the group finds you. Well, school is starting soon in the Wasatch Back, and the Summit County Health Department reminds parents about required vaccinations. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the rules apply to kindergartners and seventh graders.
Back-to-school vaccines are required by the Utah Department of Health and Human Services statewide, and the agency decides which vaccines to require based on recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control. Summit County Health Director Phil Bondurant invites residents to reach out to the health department for more information. The department's goal is to keep preventable diseases in Summit County at bay. Bondurant says viruses like polio and measles have spiked in places where vaccination rates declined.
And we're starting to see some of these childhood preventable diseases pop up not only in children, but in adults as well.
Summit County has no reported measles or polio cases, and he says vaccines will help it stay that way. So schools need written proof of certain vaccinations. Kindergartners have the longest list. They need the DTaP, MMR, polio, chickenpox, and hepatitis A and B shots. The next checkup is in seventh grade. Those children need to have a Tdap booster and meningococcal vaccine in addition to those required before kinder. Flu and COVID-19 shots aren't required by law, but they are recommended. State health officials also recommend seventh graders receive the HPV vaccine. All the required shots are available at the Summit County Health Department offices in Park City, Camas, and Colville.
There's different tracks and different strategies to accomplish all of those vaccinations from the moment of birth clear up until a child is ready to attend kindergarten. And so we can work through that process, make sure families understand the risks, and have all the information they need to make the best decision possible for them and their children.
To learn more or claim an exemption, contact the Summit County Health Department at 435-333-1500. You can also visit summitcountyhealth.org or immunize.utah.gov. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, a Park City teen was among six young athletes from Utah who went to Paris for the Festival 24 des Sports dans la Vie. KPCW's Christine Muller reports the teen got her start in sports thanks to local programs.
Park City High School student and Latinos in Action Vice President Victoria Rosales went to France to participate in the Festival 24 des Sports dans la Vie in July. The festival brought over 500 young athletes from 37 countries together to celebrate Olympic values and promote sports.
It was very exciting because I met other kids like me who also do sports and were my age and like have similar experiences as I do.
Rosales was also able to celebrate Utah being awarded the 2034 Winter Olympics.
I was sitting down at like this temple when we were camping, and this kid from Chicago came up to us. And he was like, did you guys hear about the 2034? And we were like, yeah, we were so happy.
The event was part of a growing partnership with Utah and Sports dans la Vie, a Paris-based youth sports organization. The Youth Sports Alliance, a Wasatch-backed organization created after the 2002 Winter Games to promote youth sports, is part of the partnership. Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher said she chose Rosales to participate in the festival.
When the Festival 24 called and said, do you have an athlete from Park City that isn't necessarily looking to go to the Olympics but represents what sport can do for youth, I immediately thought of Victoria.
Rosales learned to ski and mountain bike through the Youth Sports Alliance's Get Out and Play program. She now teaches kids how to ski through the program.
Just the full circle of learning how to ski through our programs and now being able to teach. And for those students to see, you know, an instructor that looks like her and who speaks Spanish is really heartwarming.
Rosales is also the captain of Park City High School's mountain bike team. Fisher said Get Out and Play is an opportunity for kids to try out different sports. During the 2023-24 school year, she said over 2,500 students from 23 different schools participated in 154 programs. About 26% of those students received scholarships from the Alliance, and 31% identified as minorities.
Our after-school programs are unique because we not only provide the activity, but we also provide transportation, proper gear, proper clothing, to make sure that any student who wants to try an activity can participate.
The Alliance supports seven local winter sports clubs for kids to join if they want to continue pursuing a sport. There are also scholarships for kids who can't afford program fees. Rosales learned to ski through the Alliance's program alongside her older sister, Jamie Rosales, who she looks up to.
I've learned to be more patient with myself. I've always wanted to be better, always be with my older sister because she was always a good skier. And I always wanted to be beside her skiing, but I knew I had to be patient with myself because I was still learning how to ski.
Although Rosales doesn't want to continue mountain bike competitions after high school, she plans on keeping sports in her life, especially skiing. The Alliance also sent figure skater Kate Presgrove and luge athlete Orson Colby, two young aspiring Olympians, to Paris to support Utah's bid for the 2034 Games. Alliance programs encourage all Park City youth to make sports a part of their lives, whether they have Olympic goals or not. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office is investigating after a dog was shot and killed at a Midway home Saturday. Deputies found evidence of animal cruelty and the illegal discharge of a firearm in city limits. It's now up to the Wasatch County Attorney's Office to determine what, if any, criminal charges will be filed. Wasatch County Sheriff Jared Rigby said in a statement, "This incident is being taken very seriously. The safety of our community, including its animals, is the top priority for the office. We are thoroughly investigating the incident to ensure all appropriate actions are taken." Under Utah law, anyone found guilty of aggravated animal cruelty could face felony charges, jail time, and thousands of dollars in fines. No other information was available last night. This is a developing story and will be updated as more details are confirmed.